Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of From My Point of View, the second to last football podcast that we're really going to have. And I think for that reason, there are some things in the NBA that I want to talk about, like obviously Doc Rivers going to the Bucks. I think that's a horrible hire. It doesn't really fix what's broken with them. That's my quick synopsis on that. There's other stuff obviously going around with the NBA. The scoring is like literally crazy. Embiid had 70, Pat had 62, Booker had 62, Luka Doncic had 73. Like, scoring was absolutely off the charts this past week. So there's literally so much I want to talk about. Maybe we'll get to it at the end of the pod, but I really want to focus on the AFC and NFC championship games today. And then next week, we can talk a lot about basketball, because basketball is going to be in full swing. Like, obviously, going into the All-Star break. So we're approaching that juncture, and a lot of basketball is going to be talked about soon. But for now, kind of want to focus on football. We have the championship games this past Sunday I want to talk about, and then next week we'll kind of fill in with whatever, and then the Super Bowl. And then from there, it'll be like a lot of basketball, and then eventually baseball. So awesome. The championship games, two great games. Unfortunately for a lot of people, I mean, for me, it was, I didn't bet against Patrick Mahomes, and I will continue not to. So I had them beating the Ravens. I had them covering against the Ravens. And then I took all the money that I won there and then lost it all plus more betting on the Lions, because I doubled down on the Lions like twice during the game. It was brutal to watch that. Jahmyr Gibbs receiving yards in the second half. I missed by like 1 yard for my parlay. That sucked. Lot to talk about. We're not going to talk really about my gambling, but we'll talk about the games for sure. So honestly, let's get right into it. The AFC Championship game, Kansas City Chiefs at the Baltimore Ravens. Things got chippy here in the beginning. There was some scuffling going on. Travis Kelce took Justin Tucker's equipment, his helmet, and his footballs that he was using to practice with, and just like tossed them out of the end zone because he was warming up in Patrick Mahomes' space. Tucker said that, you know, that's usually what kickers do. They go to the opposite end. I don't really know if that's real or not, or why that would be a thing, but he seems pretty genuine. I don't think he's like trolling or anything. He's just like, yeah, I've been doing that for 12 years, never had an issue. So I think that was more like competitive edge, like, you know, Mahomes is trying to shoo him away, and then Kelce comes in, the big bad Travis Kelce, is just like, get your shit out of here. You know, my quarterback's warming up. And that caused some sparks with other people on each team, that they got into a scuffle. And then throughout the course of the game, it was very obvious Travis Kelce had some beef with a lot of people on the Ravens defense. So with this game, Chiefs win 17-10, just mistakes everywhere for Baltimore. And Kansas City, what they do best is they get out to a lead, and they don't take their foot off the gas. Like, Mahomes and their offense, they still do everything they need to do. They need a first down, they get it. You know, they need a third down conversion, they get it. And then the defense just stifles you, completely stifles you. Spagnuolo was blitzing the shit out of Lamar literally all game. Harbaugh and the Ravens offense, they had no real Monken, the coordinator. They had no real answer for the Chiefs defense and Spagnuolo's game plan for them. They could not adjust. I think the first drive of the series was 3 and out, and then they just stopped doing whatever their game plan was. That's what it felt like, because they didn't run the football. They ran the football less than 10 times with their running backs. That's not including Lamar scrambles or the end of rounds that they did to Zay Flowers. It was just, they didn't run the football at all. And that's something that they've done. That's part of their identity. That's running the football is part of the Ravens' identity. It has been all year. And this isn't the first time the Ravens have gotten to the playoffs and completely abandoned the running game in favor of like trying to make Lamar Jackson pass the football more. And it just doesn't work. It hasn't worked ever, and it doesn't work now. So it was, you start with, let's talk about the Chiefs' successes. So the Chiefs, Chris Jones was a complete game disruptor. As I mentioned, Steve Spagnuolo blitzing Lamar a ton, throwing a bunch of different disguises and looks at him. And it kept him in the pocket for a long period of time. And he made mistakes. I mean, he had the strip sack which actually didn't end up turning into points for the, or maybe that was for, no, that was for the Lions. So it did try. I think it ended up in a field goal for the Chiefs. So the strip sack turning into points. Oh, no, I was right. That was what I was thinking. Maybe that was the Lions game I was thinking of when they went for it on fourth down after the interception. But they also did that in this game, which those are two things. Like, you get a turnover in your opponent's territory. Like, just take the points. I understand it's fourth and one, and, like, you are the Chiefs, so, like, I get it. But at the same time, you should take the points. They try and run on fourth and one with Pacheco. He gets stuffed. That was a huge, huge, huge stop for the Ravens, but it didn't stop Lamar from messing up, and he had one horrible one. This was, so you have the strip sack. It doesn't end up biting you in the ass, right? You get lucky. But the biggest mistake he made, down 17-7, you're down 10 points, 7 minutes left in the ball game. You need points. You need bare minimum a field goal. You're at the 25-yard line of Kansas City. So you have Justin Tucker. This is basically automatic, right? We don't like to assume field goals because what you can't, you literally can't, but this is Justin Tucker from the 25-yard line. Like, this is a chip shot for him. On second down, second and 10, Lamar inexcusably throws a deep ball over the middle into triple coverage, looking for Isaiah Likely. The ball's picked off. Lamar goes back to the sideline, slams his helmet. The Ravens would end up getting a field goal to make it 17-10. But that and the Zay Flowers mess up were the two biggest mistakes that the Ravens made all game. So Lamar throws it into triple coverage to Isaiah Likely when they need points, they need a field goal. And then Zay Flowers, after making a big catch, he gets penalized for unsportsmanlike conduct, taunting for pushing, I think it was Snead, off of him and then standing over him. Soft call, let the boys taunt. That's stupid. Shout out Joe Burrow. But he gets flagged for that. Stupid penalties. A ton of stupid penalties for the Ravens. Unsportsmanlike penalties. The taunting one. And then you have Zay Flowers gets the ball again. And he reaches for the goal line. And Lejarius Sneed, I think it was, punches the ball out. The Chiefs recovered it in the end zone. It's a touchback. And that kills that opportunity for the Ravens. So that mistake, the strip sack, the triple coverage interception. Kyle Van Noy got flagged for a 15-yard penalty against Travis Kelce. Just really bad, roughing the passers on Mahomes where he gets clubbed across the face. Really bad, undisciplined football by the Baltimore Ravens on Sunday, which is, it's upsetting to see because, like, they weren't like that all game, all year. You know, they were a great team, well-coached, executed to the highest standard, and you get to the Chiefs. And it looked like the Chiefs got under their skin just literally from the get-go. Travis Kelce was in Patrick Queen's face all game. And I should say also Patrick Queen was in Travis Kelce's face all game. It's not like Patrick Queen was run from it. He was actually every time Patrick Queen tackled Travis Kelce or every time Travis Kelce got tackled by someone else, Patrick Queen was in the area and they were barking at each other all game. And I was saying, I'm like, something must have happened. And I'm not even talking about the pregame stuff that with Justin Tucker or anybody else I said beforehand. Like, something must have happened at the beginning of that game. Patrick Queen must have said something. Kelce must have said something. They were in each other's faces all game. Travis Kelce was cooking the Ravens. He absolutely cooked the Ravens. I think for one point, he had 10 targets for 10 catches and 100 yards and a touchdown. I think in the first half that was, or just coming out of halftime, he caught his 10th catch on his 10th target. So he was like absolutely vintage, like Travis Kelce, which we know I say vintage and I hate saying that, but like he was slow the second half of the year, didn't really have the stats that he usually has. And then of course in the playoffs, he absolutely turns it up and he's playing out of his mind. Him and Mahomes are just like, just classic what they've been doing for years. Everything looks the same. Can't stop him. And Travis Kelce is just barking at this Ravens defense the entire game, dude. And yeah, I mean, the Chiefs do what they do, man. They just, they execute. I think at one point on one drive, they had like four third down conversions, long ones too, like third and 11, third and six. They really long conversions that just, they're a gut punch. Yeah. In the first half of the game, They converted third and one, third and four, third and five, third and three, and that drive ended up in a touchdown, the 16-play drive. Like, that is what they do. When Mahomes needs a first down, he gets a first down. When the defense needs a stop, they get a stop. Like, when they need points, they make it happen. So, like, yeah, 17-10, Ravens defense kept them in it. You know, the offense for the Chiefs wasn't really doing much. But I can promise you, if that game was tied 17-17 and Mahomes had the ball last, he's winning that football game. You know, like, it's just one of those things where you can't bet against Patrick Mahomes. He is in that realm of Tom Brady. He's definitely, obviously the whole the GOAT, who's the GOAT conversation is starting to stir up and will intensify this offseason if the Chiefs end up winning another Super Bowl. Even if he wins the Super Bowl, he's not close. He's just not. Like, career accolades, I don't care about. He has three Super Bowls. Yeah, obviously, he's super talented. He's one of the best ever. Like, if he wins another Super Bowl, he's already easily top five ever. Like, no debate. But to say he's better than a guy who played, like, over 20 years, has every accolade, every stat, seven Super Bowls, like, that's a lot, dude. Like, Mahomes is at three. Like, he's not even halfway there. What are we doing? You know, like, let's pump the brakes a little bit and just appreciate his greatness for what it is. But what I will say in terms of Tom Brady and what I will equate him to is that he is a quarterback right now that is so good that you can't bet against him. If you bet against him, you're asking to get your heart torn out and your money taken. That's what it is. So for me, for the Super Bowl, like, I'm going to bet on the Chiefs. I'm going to bet on Patrick Mahomes. And if they lose, I'll be happy the Niners won because I like the Niners. So if they win, I'll be happy the Niners won, and I won't care that much that I lost money. But with Mahomes, it's like he has this. I saw a great tweet. I couldn't find it, but it was. I'm gonna paraphrase it. It's like this Super Bowl is going to be electric because you have Brock Purdy's divine luck versus Patrick Mahomes' dark voodoo magic, which I thought was pretty clever, which it's true. Like, Mahomes had one throw where he bought a bunch of time in the pocket, stepped up, got hit as he threw, and Kelce made this unbelievable diving catch. Just really insane stuff. Like, shit like that you see and you're like, how are we supposed to beat a team when they're doing this? You know, just Mahomes has this natural ability to make these back-breaking plays. Like, when you need a stop, you have them there. You got it. Like, it's third and whatever. Like, you make a stop. Mahomes, almost every time, feels like he converts and he just breaks your back that way. And it's brutal. It's brutal to watch this, you know, this heart getting ripped out of a team in real time. It is insane. And you saw a lot of the frustration boiling over with Lamar. He's scrambling around and he's not taking off running. And that was a huge thing that I think a lot of people noticed for sure, is that Lamar is in the pocket. They're not doing any designed runs. They're not running the ball with their running backs. So basically, it's all dropbacks, like an insane amount of dropbacks for Lamar Jackson. And he's staying in the pocket. You know, he's trying to find his receivers. He's waiting about a second or two too long to take off and run with the football. And he's getting caught from behind. And he's getting tackled for a 1 yard gain or back to the line of scrimmage. You know, these are things that he has to be more decisive. He has to lean on in his inherent abilities to play make and run with the football. And I think his name's Jordan Palmer. He's like this QB coach, does YouTube stuff. And he talked about Lamar's mechanics. And it's not about necessarily that his mechanics are bad. It's just that they're inconsistent. So, like, he brought up guys like Josh Allen, Mahomes. Yeah, they throw from different arm slots. Yeah, they throw with their feet not set. Aaron Rodgers, too. Like, he throws with his feet not set. And it's just kind of like this flick of the wrist. But every time they throw, it's the same way every time, right? Whenever they make certain passes, it's the same way every time. Whenever Josh Allen throws a bubble screen, it's the same way every time. And Lamar, his biggest problem is that he doesn't throw the ball the same way every time, whether it's in the pocket on the, I saw he had a lot of difficulty throwing accurately on the run in this game against Kansas City as well. And that was his thing, is that, like, his footwork, his release point, nothing is the same every single time. And that's the biggest red flag when it comes to him throwing the football accurately. And we've seen it in multiple playoffs throughout multiple years now that Lamar, when he, and I think I said it a couple weeks ago, maybe even last week, where Lamar's biggest thing is like his biggest red flag and concern that you have to have as a Ravens fan and the franchise is like, if he has to throw the football, can he do it consistently and can he do it accurately? And throughout the entire season, he was doing well. And the Ravens obviously were fantastic, but just so many things went wrong for them. They were obviously flustered by Steve Spagnuolo and that defense. They were frustrated defensively going up against Mahomes and like just the back-breaking plays that he makes consistently. They completely abandoned their running game and they weren't getting the ball to their best playmakers consistently. Mark Andrews was kind of a decoy. Odell didn't have a catch until a huge fourth down in the fourth quarter. They didn't get him going, which I think was a mistake. Zay Flowers, a ton of mental mistakes from Lamar, from Zay Flowers, from multiple guys on the defense. Like they were just making undisciplined mistakes. And in the playoffs, that absolutely cannot happen. And if you watch this game, it was very clear who was the team that played really well in the regular season and who is the two-time champions. Like who, what team's defending? If you watch that game, what team's defending their title and what team is trying to make it to a Super Bowl? It was like glaringly obvious. These teams were evenly matched in talent. Some could even argue that the Ravens are a more talented team, but just completely undisciplined and outcoached this entire time. And it was, I bet on the Chiefs and it was frustrating to watch the Ravens. Like that's how it felt because you just knew that they're leaving so much on the table. They were leaving so much to be desired. These mistakes, the game planning, like running the football, establishing your identity. Like why are you getting away from what made you great? It just felt like they were playing a brand of football that was not what they were doing the entire season. It was just a complete tonal and identity shift for no reason. Like if they stuck to their guns and they played the same brand of football they played all year, they could have won that game. They could have at least tied the game. Like there's, and really that Lamar interception kind of is all encompassing in terms of how this game went for the Ravens and how frustrating it was because at the KC 25, 7 minutes left, you're down 10, you need points. Don't force it. You don't have to force it into the end zone. It's not even a goal to go situation, right? You could still pick up a first down if you just work your way down the field. It's second down also. It's second down. Like there's legitimately 0% reason to throw that ball to Isaiah Likely. And I thought it was hilarious that they showed the replay and Likely stuck his hand up like he thought he was goddamn Randy Moss. Meanwhile, he's triple covered. And Lamar, like, I guess, listened to him because he saw his, he threw him the ball. So I really don't understand that one play was so frustrating. And maybe the worst decision, I mean, not even maybe, it was by far the worst decision you could have made in that entire game because even then, again, 7 minutes, timeouts, you kick the field goal with Justin Tucker, now you're down 7. Trust your defense. It's been the best all year. Like, trust your defense to make a stop. You've been doing it the entire second half. You've been stopping the Chiefs. You just haven't been scoring. So, and then you have the Zay Flowers thing too. It's just so many bad mistakes for the Ravens against the team with the Chiefs that do not make mistakes. The Chiefs do not make mistakes. And they convert when they have to. And that's why they're so difficult to beat. And that's why they're the best. And that's why Mahomes is the best. They just execute to a degree that no one else really does. So Patrick Mahomes now improves to 14-3 in the playoffs. That's a whole season worth of games. And he's put up like MVP numbers the entire time. He's a freak. The Chiefs are great. They're going for back-to-back. I think they're going to get it. But they certainly have a tough opponent in the San Francisco 49ers, which brings us to the NFC Championship game. And oh my God, this could not be a worse loss. Like, this is an all-time painful loss for Detroit and Lions fans, and I feel so bad for them. Obviously, I lost money on them, so that sucks, but, like, as a fan, that's got to be just one of the worst ways to lose a football game. Just slowly, slowly seeing everything go wrong with you. I saw a tweet that said, it's absolutely insane to watch God abandon a team in real time. And that's what happened with the Lions, because everything was going their way. First drive of the game, Jameson Williams end around 40-plus yard touchdown. Gibbs, big run, touchdown. They're instantly up 14-0. And they get dominated in the second half. Let's just go through the list of mistakes. I mean, you watch the game if you're listening to this. This is it, man. I mean, Josh Reynolds drops a fourth down conversion. It's 4th and 3. This one's like, so at the end of the half, it was like from the 5-yard line or 6-yard line, something like that. Lions take the points. I like that. I thought it was good to take the points instead of going for it. Then in the red zone, it's 4th and 3. They decide to go for it instead of going up 17. This, at this point, it's 24-10. So instead of going up 17, they decide to go for it. And I don't hate that decision. Dan Campbell's been aggressive all year. He was aggressive in this game. And if his players simply caught the football, the Lions would be in the Super Bowl. So Josh Reynolds on a 4th and 3, he drops the ball and then is seen laughing about it on the sidelines with his teammate, like, haha, yeah, I didn't turn my hands the right way. That's why I dropped it. Oh, it's so funny. The next Niners possession that they have, Purdy launches a deep ball, horribly thrown, and it bounces off of Vildor, the defensive back for the Lions, bounces off his face mask as he's trying to make a catch going to the ground, and Ayuk ends up catching it down at the 3. Niners score a touchdown. The next play from scrimmage, first down. Lions have a botched handoff to Gibbs. He tries to control it. The ball gets stripped out. All of a sudden, San Francisco has the ball in Detroit territory. Right there, the Vildor off the face mask, Ayuk catch to the Gibbs touchdown. The next drive is the changing point of this game. You felt the momentum shift, like, oh my God, the Lions are going to lose. And the Niners scored. Now all of a sudden it's a 3-point game. Next possession for the Lions. 3rd and long in your own territory. Josh Reynolds wide open, hits him in the chest, and he drops it. Another drop for Josh Reynolds. Is it still funny? That's what I want to know. Was he laughing about that one on the sideline? Because then the Lions had to punt it. So you have that, and then this one I'm not really sure I agree with. It's a 7-point game at this point. 4th down in field goal range. I mean, I don't know. Going for it there, Goff scrambles. He underthrows St. Brown, and it's a turnover on down. That one stinks, but, like, you had so many other mistakes, like, 2 or 3 times where the Lions got to Brock Purdy and he scrambled. This is in the second half, Brock Purdy played horribly in the first half. In the second half, he played well, and he scrambled a ton. Like, back-breaking 5-10-yard scrambles that Brock Purdy had for first downs where the Lions almost sacked him, and he slips through as he steps up and then takes off running for 10 yards. Things that you see, and you're just like, oh, my. It reminded me of Tony Romo. I remember when I was growing up, watching the Giants play the Cowboys, every time Tony Romo took off to run, it would kill me because he's like a pocket passer, you know, not really crazy athletic, but when he took off to run and had all this open space, I'd be like, oh my God, this jerk, like, what are we doing? You know, it would piss me off. And that's how it felt watching Brock Purdy do that, because he's not known for his mobility. He's not known for taking off and running with the football, yet he did it this game, improvising it, and he did it really well and very, very successfully. So just back-breaking scrambles by Purdy. Jameson Williams on a fake. He was blocking prematurely. He was blocking a little bit and then disengaged and took off running. And he was open, couldn't locate the football, goes through his hands. That could have been a touchdown. So just so many plays right there, like the missed sacks on Purdy. The dropped 4th down by Reynolds. The dropped 3rd down by Reynolds. The Gibbs fumble. The Vildor interception that turned into the biggest gain that the 49ers had on a single play all game. Like, that's 5 things right there that you're just like, opportunity slipping through your fingers and you're watching it happen. You're like, oh my God, not a single one of these things are breaking the Lions' way. and the just them losing the lead. The only decision by Dan Campbell that I vehemently disagree with, and I think every single person watching disagreed with, was there's like a minute left in the game. The Lions have all three timeouts. They're at like the 2-yard line and it's third down, and the Lions decided to run the football. That's the only thing you absolutely cannot do. David Montgomery gets stuffed and then they have to use a timeout. Now you're forced to kick the onside kick, which isn't going to work because onside kicks are impossible to recover nowadays. So you put yourself in an unwinnable situation. Like, at least if you pass the ball, if you don't get it, now it's fourth down. Now, if you want to run the ball, you can. Now everything's on the table. You can do whatever you want. But in that specific instance, you have to pass the football. Because at least if you score, you still retain all three of your timeouts. You can kick the ball off like normal to the Chiefs and just try, to the Niners, excuse me, and just try to get a three and out. Try to get a three and out. Use your timeouts. Get the ball back with like minimal, like max probably 20, 25 seconds and no timeouts. It's a basically impossible situation to win anyway. But at least at that point, then you can get into field goal range. Maybe, like, we've seen crazier things happen. But my point being is, like, you're taking that all away. Like, you're immediately making it impossible to win this game. So I just don't understand why they did that. I have absolutely no idea why they decided to run the ball on third down. It is an inexcusable play call. And that's really the only decision that I really disagree with Dan Campbell. Again, really tough position either way. You're probably not going to win that game regardless. But, like, just in terms of execution, game planning and game con and, like, managing a game, you have to be able to, like, understand, like, what to do in that scenario, and running the football was not it. So just very perplexing there. But other than that, it's like I mentioned all those things. Just every single time it seemed like there was a momentum shifting play, it bounced the 49ers way. Like, all of these 50-50 things where Brock Purdy's wrapped up and he escapes and runs for 10 yards, goes the Niners' way. Jameson Williams not being able to locate the football goes through his hands. That goes the Niners' way. Vildor off the face mask goes the Niners' way. The Gibbs fumble because Goff, I think, thought it was a handoff to the left, but it was to the right. Or Gibbs thought it was a handoff to the left he went left. I don't know exactly whose mistake it was or what, but, like, clearly there was a miscommunication there. The Niners were, like, basically in the backfield as Gibbs got the ball, and they ripped it out pretty easily. Things like that, like, that sucks. The Josh Reynolds two drops, like, I hope you're are you still laughing, Josh Reynolds? Because I think it was, they thought just because they were up that it was, like, okay to laugh at that. CJ Gardner-Johnson waving goodbye to the Niners fans in the second quarter. Like, are we kidding? This is what I talk about with, like, teams that have been there before and teams that haven't. The Ravens, roughing the passer, unsportsmanlike conduct, taunting, reaching for the end zone when it's not fourth down and the ball, like, you saw it happen. Literally, you saw it happen to the Chiefs last week against the Bills. How are you doing the same mistake, Zay Flowers? That's another, that's one thing. And then the Lions waving goodbye, CJ Gardner-Johnson waving goodbye to San Francisco fans. Like, these are two teams that, some of the things that happen, I mean, obviously not, that's really just the one thing with the Lions, but that's one thing. And then, like, the personal fouls and taunting penalties for the Ravens, those are, like, two teams that are there, but they've never been there before. And the other two teams that they're going against have been to Super Bowls. They know what it takes. They know how to act. They know it's not over till it's over, right? They don't get ahead of themselves. They don't celebrate early, right? That's what separates these two teams, these four franchises. That's what separates them. So it's just, it was frustrating. It was so frustrating to watch because at every single turn, I don't blame Dan Campbell. I do not blame Dan Campbell. I think he's a great coach. I think he has his philosophy and he's stuck to it. And I respect him for that because you know what happens when you are an ultra aggressive newer coach who's ultra aggressive, loves to go for it on fourth down. You know what happens when you stop doing that and you start settling for field goals or you start doubting your philosophy and doubting what you have? Like, he trusted his players 100%. And guess what? The plays worked. Josh Reynolds was open and people were open on those downs and they just didn't catch the football. So He trusts his guys to make those plays. He's trusted them all year. And for the fourth down ones, it's like, thinking Michael Badgley is going to make that is not a gimme. He's not a great kicker. So I don't really know what was up with the kicking situation. Obviously, Riley Patterson, he even won them a game against the Chargers. Like, he wasn't too bad. Something must have happened when they cut him. So then Michael Badgley had to come in. He's not great either. So he didn't really want to risk it up to the kicker, because it's not people who are saying, like, just take the points. Your kicking situation is suspect, so the points aren't a guarantee. But what happens to a coach when they're ultra aggressive and that's their philosophy, and when they start doubting themselves and kicking field goals or punting in situations that they would normally go for it, what happens to those kind of coaches? They turn into Brandon Staley. That's what happens. A guy who everyone dislikes and doesn't understand and is critical of, and then they lose their job. That's what happens when you do that. So if you're going to ride or die by your philosophy, I can get behind that, because your players should have converted. Josh Reynolds should have converted multiple times. The Vildor thing is just like inexplicably dumb luck for the San Francisco 49ers. There's no getting around that. It was pretty frustrating to watch. Tip of the cap to Brock Purdy. You know, he executed in the second half when he had to. Obviously, he has that insanely lucky throw to Ayuk, but other than that, like, he played well in the second half. I mentioned his back-breaking scrambles that he had against the Lions defense. Christian McCaffrey is the best player on that team and should probably be the league MVP over Lamar, but we're not going to talk about that because Lamar's pretty much already locked it up because it's a QB award, even though it shouldn't be. But CMC will probably get Offensive Player of the Year. So just some really good things on both sides. You know, the Niners defense stepped up in the second half. They made a lot of plays. It was frustrating to watch. It was really sad and disappointing to see, like, basically this really young, promising team and this really likable head coach and quarterback, and just them doing everything right and it just not working. You know, I really do believe that. I really do think the Lions made all the right decisions and they just didn't work, which is why I talked about before, I mentioned briefly before that tweet that I saw, Patrick Mahomes, black voodoo magic, and Brock Purdy, divine luck. Like, that's what it is, dude. Like, Mahomes does things where you're like, there's no way, this is sorcery. He can't be doing this. He's not a normal person who's be able to make these throws and do these things and crush these souls the way he does. And then Brock Purdy is just like, is he supposed to be this good? Is it divine? Is he surrounded by team? The IU catch, but for all intents and purposes, screams divine luck. Like, there's no reason why Vildor should not have picked that ball off. It's things like that. It makes you scratch your head. It makes you confused. It makes you sad. Like, I'm sad for Detroit. I really am. Again, super cool, fun, likable, respectable head coach and quarterback. They have a lot of great guys on that team that are easy to root for. Amon-Ra St. Brown, Jahmyr Gibbs is electric, David Montgomery. I really do think they called a good game, aside from the one rushing call at the very end. But outside of that, I think they couldn't have called a better game. Off the top of my head, I can't think of anything else that really made me like question what they were doing. It just didn't work. Like, they just dropped a lot of drops and they couldn't execute it, which is so tough it's such a tough pill to swallow how many times they didn't execute, because throughout the entirety of the year, I think they were like 75% going for it on fourth down, maybe even better. Like, they were amazing all year going for it on fourth down, all year executing these third and fourth down plays. And this game, they just didn't get any. Like, not even one of them broke their way. If that Josh Reynolds fourth and three, instead of going up seven, kicking the field goal on 17 and going for it, if he caught that ball, the Lions probably score and go up by 21 points. And at that point, you're thinking Super Bowl, right? Like, that is insane to me that it's so clear as day the mistakes that were made that would have sent the Lions to the Super Bowl, yet it has nothing to do with coaching. Speaking of coaching, one thing Lions fans can be happy about is that Ben Johnson is not leaving. So Ben Johnson, considered to be one of the top coaching candidates, Adam Schefter said he may not have been a lock of a coach as it seems. His asking price kind of spooked some GMs. Whatever, dude. Like, he's a hot commodity. Everyone looked at him as being like the front runner for these head coaching opportunities. But he recently informed the Seahawks and the Commanders that he is going to stay in Detroit. So that's a huge win for Dan Campbell and this coaching staff and this roster, that he is sticking around at least for another year. Obviously, next year is always going to come around and people are going to be asking about him for head coaching vacancies. It's going to happen. But this is a huge win for Detroit and having him stick around, and they can continue to grow and get better. I wish I could say that they'll be back, but the NFL, this sport doesn't love you, bro. Like, it really does not love anybody except for like two or three guys in the history of football. it really doesn't, because look at some of the other NFC teams that, you know, maybe, wow, this is kind of shocking that they got here, right? Matt Ryan and the Falcons, they never got back to an NFC championship game. They never got back to a Super Bowl. MVP Cam Newton on top of the world. Panthers never got back there, right? The Lions, like, do they fit? Are they going to be around for a long time? Like, are they going to be competitive for the next 2-3 years? I think so, just because they drafted so well. A lot of their key positions are young. Montgomery is a veteran, but he's still only like 27, 28 years old. He's still got some mileage left, and he's splitting carry with Gibbs, who's a great rookie. Laporta is an all-pro. He's a rookie. They have 3 first-round picks on their offensive line that are still young and in their prime. And their offensive line is spectacular, by the way. Jared Goff is only 28, 29 years old. 29 years old, I think. So he's still got definitely a few great years left. Amon-Ra St. Brown's like 24. Jameson Williams is going to get, I think, some more target-heavy schemes for him next year. You know, he was coming off the suspension this year, so I think it took him a while to get rolling. But I think he's going to be really heavily utilized in the offense next year because he's absolutely electric. And the defense, Aiden Hutchinson, of course, being the anchor there, they have a lot of good young guys. Like, the team is young. It's not like they were aging, you know, the prime is now, we got to go. They have a lot of young pieces that they can build around and be competitive with for the next 3, 4, 5 seasons easily. So I hope that they do that. I hope that Dan Campbell can continually get them into the playoffs. And Campbell said, you know, it's going to be twice as tough to get back here next year, but that's why you do it. You know, that's what's the agony of losing and the thrill of victory is why people love sports and play sports. And he's right. Like, he's the man, you know? And I think when you look at these two teams that lost, there's a stark difference. The Lions and the Ravens, like, why didn't they get there? Dan Campbell just comes down to just execution on the player's part. He stuck true to his guns. I think Colin Cowherd said this today or yesterday. I'm recording Tuesday afternoon, so it's a late episode. But today or yesterday, he said, like, you know, Harbaugh was coaching malpractice because he went away from what made the Ravens great all season. But Dan Campbell, it's like, yeah, it didn't work out, but he stuck to who he is. He stuck to his guns. And those are the best type of coaches, that no matter what, they stick to their philosophy through when it works and when it doesn't work, and they don't get scared and they don't run away and try and change things. And that's Dan Campbell to a T. Like, he, and to be able to like retain Ben Johnson, who's like, I want to stick around and try it one more time. Like, let's try and get back there. Let's try and do this. I really like the culture is such an important aspect of sports, and the culture in Detroit has completely shifted to that of like, we got our guys. Like, this is it. We got our guys to push us into the future. And I'm very excited to see Dan Campbell and the Lions continue to move forward and improve, because they're a fun group to watch for sure. And Jared Goff, obviously, really easy guy to root for and all that. So, you know, I mean, Detroit, the Lions have been better than they have been since I've been alive. I've never seen the Detroit Lions quite this good. So, pretty cool. So that is the NFC and AFC championship wrap up. The San Francisco 49ers, actually, I didn't really talk too much about them, but they're back in the Super Bowl. Brock Purdy gets a chance to shut up his haters. Again, Brock Purdy, divine luck versus Patrick Mahomes, dark magic. It is going to be a great Super Bowl. I don't know why people, I saw people complaining about how like no one wanted this Super Bowl. They're like two of the best teams in football. It's going to be a great game. I don't understand why people are complaining, but you live long enough to see yourself become the villain. Like that's literally the Kansas City Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes right now. Everyone is against them. I like the Niners. I'm going to bet on the Chiefs. That's my philosophy. That's what it is. I'm not betting against Patrick Mahomes, but if they lose, I'll be okay losing that money because that means the Niners win. So I think it's going to be a win-win for me either way. I'm not going to, if the Chiefs win, what I'm not going to enjoy is the whole GOAT thing over the summer. That's going to be insufferable. But other than that, yeah, man, the Niners, I'm happy for Christian McCaffrey. He's an absolute beast. Like he certainly deserves a championship. And so do a lot of guys on that team. So they're back here in the same spot against the Chiefs, two completely different teams from when they played in 2020. So I'm not even going to compare the two. The only thing that's the same are the head coaches and Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce. George Kittle, Nick Bosa, they were there before too. A lot of the guys on the defense were there too. But I mean, they didn't have, so the biggest difference with the Niners is that they have Brock Purdy and Christian McCaffrey. And the biggest difference is with the Chiefs is that they don't have Tyreek Hill. So one huge negative and two huge positives. We'll see if it ends up evening out for the Niners. But yeah, man, we'll do a Super Bowl preview next week. Because this week, obviously, it's 2 weeks too early. Super Bowl is February 11th on that Sunday, the second Sunday of February. So we'll talk about it next week for sure. I think that'll probably be better suited for the podcast. To wrap up, let's talk about the NBA for a minute. A couple minutes, more than a few. The Knicks have won 7 in a row. Jalen Brunson is unbelievable. The trade with the Raptors, they traded RJ Barrett, Emmanuel Quickly to Toronto for OG Anunoby. Anunoby has been spectacular, literally nothing short of unbelievable since he's gotten to New York. Brunson's been playing great. Randall's been playing great. Like this team is clicking on defense, on offense. They're making big shots. 7 wins in a row. They play the Jazz in the Garden tonight. Again, Tuesday night. So they're going for 8 in a row. They've been playing unreal basketball. And since the trade, I think they went from the 8th seed to the 4th seed. Like they are firmly in a top seeded position for the Eastern Conference. At 30-17, they are 6 games behind Boston, but they're only 2 games behind Milwaukee for the 2nd seed. So, hey, man, who knows? Sky's the limit. I don't really think anyone's catching Boston. That team's just like way too loaded. They don't lose at home. It's pretty gross, that roster that the Celtics have constructed. So I think they're probably going to run away with the 1st seed. But in terms of catching Philly and Milwaukee, I mean, they're tied with Philly for the 3rd seed, the Knicks. And again, both teams are only 2 games behind Milwaukee for that 2nd seed. And Milwaukee is so flawed. They fired Adrian Griffin and they hired Doc Rivers. I think the Doc Rivers hire is horrible. Like, you know what you're getting. With Doc Rivers, you know what you're getting. So I don't think he's the guy to like fix this team. And you could say, well, John, they're 32-15. How are the Bucks broken? If you watch them play, you know. They're just not the same team. They lack depth. They are not the same team defensively, which is something that you knew you were getting when you traded Jrue Holiday away and you got Damian Lillard. Like Damian Lillard, sensational scorer of the basketball, perimeter threat. Obviously scoring just everything offensively, but leave something to be desired on defense. Other people have to pick up the slack for him defensively. Let's be real. So they're just not the same well-rounded. In exchange for more firepower, they relinquished a lot of what made them such a great, well-rounded team. And I think they are really going to miss Jrue Holiday when the playoffs come around. Because right now, like the Bucks are the 2 seed, but if you look at, I'm not even going to consider the play-in tournament right now. We'll just call it the top 8 seeds currently. Could you see the Milwaukee Bucks losing to, depending on where they finish, they're not going to finish the 1st seed, so they won't play the 8th seed, but finishing 2, 3, 4, can you see the Bucks losing in a 7-game series to Miami, Indiana or Orlando? I can. I can easily. Easily in a 7-game series against those three teams, I can easily see the Bucks losing in 7 games for sure. So I just think like if the Bucks were to see another first round exit, I think you should probably hit the panic button on Giannis, because then the trade things are going to start talking about how, well, he doesn't want to be in Milwaukee anymore, blah, blah, blah. Even though they did exactly what he asked of them, which, newsflash, listening to your star player and his request doesn't always work out. So trading your depth and Drew Holiday for Damian Lillard might not have been the best decision. I don't see the Bucks and winning a championship, and I don't see how Doc Rivers changes that. Like, he's just not that kind of coach, you know? That was a questionable decision. You talk about the scoring that happened over the last course of the last week and where scoring's at in the NBA. It feels like every night, at least someone's popping off for like 40 plus points. Every night. The scoring is absolutely insane. It's coming in droves. And it's really exciting to watch. I mean, there's been a lot of good basketball. Luka again went nuclear last night against the Magic in what was a great game. The Magic are a good team, dude. Even though they've kind of slid a little bit and now they're evening out after a really hot start. They're 24-23. They're going to make the play-in. I think they'll probably win out in the play-in and make the tournament. Make the playoffs. So I like the Magic. I'm pretty high on them. Miami, they got Terry Rozier. I think that's a good piece for them, just considering when the playoffs come around, generally what happens with the Heat is that they play really good defense. Jimmy Butler has to be, you know, Superman. And that's won them playoff series, but it's never won them the finals. In the two final strips that they've made since Jimmy Butler's been on the Miami Heat, getting someone like Terry Rozier, it's not like a total game changer, but it certainly helps them in terms of offensive firepower, because whenever they get into those situations, it's always against a team where it's just their defense can only take them so far, and then the superstar on the other side just kind of takes over and they don't have the firepower to match them. And again, I'm not saying Terry Rozier is that kind of guy that's going to even the playing field, but he certainly helps. And he's a veteran, you know, he knows what it's like to play on a great team, on a good team. I like that move for them. The one thing with the Knicks that definitely is cause for concern, but honestly, could have been worse. Julius Randle, dislocated shoulder, no ligament damage apparently of any sort. So the time he's going to miss was, quote, measured in weeks, not months. So that is a relief, because he's been balling. And for as much criticism as he gets, Julius Randle, you have to respect him for always just coming to work. Yes, he pouts sometimes on the court, which, I mean, now the Knicks are winning and he's playing well, so that hasn't happened in a long time. But, you know, when the struggles are there, we've seen him pout. But for the most part, he could have easily just given up and left and requested a trade and been like, I don't want to be in New York anymore. But he wants to be here, and I respect him for that. And he's playing good basketball, and the Knicks are playing really well. You got Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and the Thunder first in the West, are battling for first with the Timberwolves and Anthony Edwards. So right now it's the Timberwolves at 33-14 in first, the Nuggets 33-15, they're a half game back, and then the OKC Thunder are 32-15, they're one game back. But the Clippers are legit since their trade for James Harden in the beginning of the year. They are 30-15, just two games back of the one seed. The Kings and Suns are balling out. The Mavericks are balling. The Lakers probably going to make another move at the deadline. Golden State's kind of falling apart. I think, you know, we talked a lot about the end of their dynasty a few years ago, and then they ended up winning a championship. But this seems like that was like almost like their last gasp, you know, their last hurrah, where they summoned enough energy and grit to like grind their way to another championship, and then everything came crumbling down around them, because they're not the same anymore. Klay Thompson is like a shell of himself. Draymond does nothing but cause problems. It's not the same Golden State team. And even if they got into the playoffs, I wouldn't feel comfortable betting on them, because again, they're just not the same team. So And with the Lakers, I would expect them to make a trade at the deadline for sure. Although, I mean, I don't know, man. I feel like they should be playing way better than they actually are. I don't really know if it's even the roster, but yeah, still wouldn't expect them to be quiet. But now that will do it for this episode of From My Point of View. Thank you all very much for listening. As always, appreciate you. And we'll talk more basketball next week for sure. And maybe even some baseball. I don't know. We'll see what happens. It'll be an interesting podcast next week without any football on. The Pro Bowl. Thank you all for listening. I'll talk to you all next week.